from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
This week on the Weekend Edition of Washington Watch, Congress takes a swipe at Mexico City, Trump invites immigration, and values-based investing can be good for you. Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. It wasn't that long ago that then-President Barack Obama took an axe to Ronald Reagan's Mexico City policy, which effectively kept taxpayer dollars from funding abortion overseas. And one of the first things President Trump did when he took office was to reestablish that policy. Earlier this week, the House Appropriations Committee held a hearing on funding language that circumvents the Mexico City policy once again. Nebraska Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, who is a member of the Appropriations Committee, joined FRC President Tony Perkins to talk about this move by the Democrats.
Congressman, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. Appreciate it. Pleasure to speak with you.
Well, it was. It looked like many of the pro-life provisions in the appropriations were at risk today, but this one in particular, this was one of the president's first pro-life measures that he put in place by executive order, and it looks like it's right in the crosshairs of the Democratic majority now.
It is. That's a good way to put it, and it's very, very sad. The State and Foreign Operations Subcommittee is one of 12 subcommittees of the larger Appropriations Committee. So this is how this works. We go through this every year, marking up, creating bills around spending that is a priority. We try to take it in manageable chunks. Now, year after year, this breaks down, and in the end, we have these big, larger, they're called omnibus bills. But along the way, very important debates take place. They are markers. They are the leading edge of the most significant philosophical debates and divides in the country. And if you saw that hearing today, you were on the front end of what is a deeply divisive issue in America, but worse yet, how America is potentially exporting the possibility that our taxpayer funds will be entangled in the provision of abortion. This is why what President Trump did by upholding the Mexico City policy, which was founded by President Reagan, that said that any family planning entity could not use that money for abortion. President Trump did the right thing and actually expanded it and made it even more improperly impactful so that accounting games can't take place, so that no money from American taxpayers is going to be entangled in the provision of abortion by any entity in healthcare that's entangled in the provision of abortion. So not just direct funding, but any entity that's entangled in the provision of abortion. This is actually the correct way to apply the Mexico City policy, and is consistent with America's disposition. By vast numbers, people do not want their money paying directly for abortion or entities engaged in it.
That second wave of expansion, you said, or implementation of it, really, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo just recently announcing that those subsidiaries or contractors with these foreign NGOs could not be involved in abortion or promote abortion either, which up to this point, that's not been looked at. So you are right. This administration is pursuing it to a degree that no other has. Now, let me ask you this, Congressman. One of your colleagues, our good friend Robert Adderholt from Alabama, made a point today in the committee that all of this could be for naught. I want to play a clip of what he had to say today in the committee.
The president has made his intentions very clear by a letter that he sent earlier this year, and I've got a copy of the letter right here. I'll quote, he says, "I will veto any legislation that weakens current pro-life federal policies and laws or that encourages the destruction of innocent human life at any stage." If the policy changes are made to this bill, if they're not reversed, then what we're doing here today and spending all morning here and well into the afternoon, I'm sure, it's going to all be for naught. I don't think that the chair's goal is to have a bill that will be vetoed or one that will end up going to a continuing resolution, because that, I think, is where we're headed if this language stays as it is. It goes straight to the president's desk for his veto pen.
Congressman Fortenberry, you were a part of securing that letter from the president, from the pro-life caucus. Did your Democratic colleagues, did they take note of that today?
Well, look, there were arguments back and forth. Yes, I think it was a very good point that Congressman Adderholt, a good friend of the pro-life movement's, made, that in practical terms, If we do not adhere to this fundamental principle that most Americans believe in and support, even people who might not be with us on the life issue still don't want their taxpayer dollars entangled in the provision of abortion. To President Trump's credit, he said he will veto the bill. I don't think it necessarily broke through. Again, in this kind of debate, it is about a philosophical divide, playing to certain constituencies, sadly. There's been some really hard, ugly things that have been said about those of us who hold this view that women deserve better than abortion, and certainly we shouldn't entangle taxpayer dollars in the provision, and at worst, even worse, promote this overseas, export our worst cultural divides onto poor people overseas. This is inconsistent with sound diplomacy. It is inconsistent with trying to create a culture in which we are in solidarity with other people, because we may be very well undermining their familial or religious right. norms, disrupting the relationship that we have between two nations. This is not good diplomacy, and that's the argument I tried to make.
Well, it's a very good argument. In fact, in the last 8 years under the Obama administration, I mean, it was kind of cultural imperialism, where we're imposing views, whether it be on the life issue in countries that are deeply religious, that are totally opposed to abortion, or it is the redefinition of marriage for the same reasons of opposition, of deeply held religious beliefs. And so that it is a form, in my view, of cultural imperialism. It's the worst of in terms of diplomacy. But it seems like there are those that want to use our foreign dollars to advance their own domestic agenda here in this country.
Well, this is another point that I tried to actually make, that it is absolutely our right to determine how U.S. taxpayer dollars are used overseas, because there was some implication in the debate that we could not do this. Well, we most certainly can. And not only can we do it, it's the right thing to do if we, again, are going to try to be in solidarity and use the leverage that we have because of our humanitarian impulse to help peoples worldwide, to create the space for justice, to create the space for well-being and community life, to create the space for human dignity. And when you export something like this, you're acting in a neocolonial fashion, and you're imposing the most divisive issues of the West because we think we are intellectually superior and other people around the world are inferior. And that's not right.
No. And it doesn't win friends. And we need to be building alliances with many of these countries that have, you know, they have deeply held religious and cultural beliefs that are adamantly opposed to this idea of abortion. Congressman Fortenberry, any other surprises in today's markup of the appropriations bill?
Well, again, most people who watch Congress probably think this just really isn't that natural because they don't act like this in their own lives. It's an unusual space to be a legislator at this high level because you're actually interacting with people all the time on a lot of things that you have in common and are actually building toward together. And at the same time, there are just certain spaces that you cannot reconcile. Right. And you saw that today in the hearing.
Well, I saw your comments. I watched the hearing, and I saw your comments of that as you were working on there. I think it was in Kenya, an area where you were working, where you could find common ground.
Yes.
And so it is difficult. There are places where you can find common ground, and you've got to do that. But there are also places where you've got to take principled stands, and you have to be unyielding on those.
Well, and that's the key, to try to stand for what you believe in a manner that's reasoned and inviting to others, that counters negativity or bad arguments, and yet at the same time create enough space to have relationships with people who, and hopefully enough mutual respect that they also can respond responsibly to the values proposition that we have and not just make it a personal argument against these deeply held principles. So it's most people aren't in this world, and those of us who are, it's a delicate balance there. Again, to try to be in relationship and friendship with people who have very distinct differences in certain areas, but also build the good things that we can do together. And I do believe this is an important bill. I mean, and I know a lot of Americans have heartburn over foreign aid, and yet the military says to us, send us in last, do everything that you can to build out the conditions for stability and just government so other people have a chance and aren't co-opted into twisted and dark ideology and then lash out. And that's why we do this. It's our humanitarian impulse as Americans to help those who are poor or who are sick or who need development space. It's also our responsibility to help the create the situation in which we are providing environmental security for the entire world, help for the sick, and on and on. We also benefit from this culturally and economically through the exchange and the opportunity for relationship that takes place. But finally, if those two arguments don't work, this argument that it is also about our security, creating the conditions for stability, is also a strong one. That's why we do this.
Right.
But when we create these divides over controversial issues where they're just two stark sides, it does disrupt diplomacy and the very purpose of the foreign aid bill, from my perspective.
It works if it's done right. That's the challenge. I would add one element that's needed for those like yourself that are involved in this. It's endurance. Just sitting in those committees and those markups for that long can be very taxing in and of itself.
Especially on these volatile emotional issues that can easily cross the line between reason and emotion. There are a lot of insults hurled our way today. It's a little bit painful to have to sit there and take that. But again, I think what we have to do, particularly in our day and time, is to state clearly through sound reason why we believe what we believe and invite people to the proposition without tearing anybody else down.
Right.
And again, I think that's consistent with the very mission of the very bill itself, state and foreign operations, to do the same with other peoples around the world.
Congressman Jeff Fortenberry, thanks so much for joining us today and for holding the line on issues of life and those things which matter most. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony. Thank you, Tony.
You can find out more about Congressman Fortenberry and the Mexico City policy when you visit tonyperkins.com. You'll also find a link there to join us for the Values Voter Summit coming up in October in Washington, D.C. You'll join like-minded individuals as you hear from dozens of speakers talking about faith, family, and freedom. That website, once more, is tonyperkins.com.
There is unprecedented religious persecution around the globe. In recent years, research has found increasing governmental and social hostility towards religious believers worldwide. For the last 10 years, Christians have been harassed in more countries, including the United States, than any other religious group. For more information on religious hostility due to apostasy, blasphemy, and anti-conversion laws around the world, visit frc.org/ABA laws. That is frc.org/ABA laws.
Discover Alaska as you vacation with Tony Perkins and Family Research Council. You will love every moment of this unforgettable experience. Get a behind-the-scenes look at what Family Research Council is doing in our nation's capital with Tony Perkins, General Jerry Boykin, Ken Blackwell, and Michelle Bachman. You'll be vacationing with the FRC family and a lot of new friends. Get away with purpose on Family Research Council's Alaska Cruise July 7 to 14. Get more information at frc.org/Alaska. That's frc.org/Alaska.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. About the only thing you think of these days when someone talks about immigration is the wall. And while securing our southern border is important for the social and economic fabric of our country, not to mention security, there are other issues at play. And this week, President Trump unveiled a very innovative plan to overhaul the immigration system. Joining FRC President Tony Perkins to discuss the president's vision for immigration is Jerron Smith, Deputy Assistant to the President and Deputy Director of the Office of American Innovation.
Jerron, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Mr. Perkins. It's a pleasure.
Well, it's a pretty bold step by the President, but as I understand it and as it's been explained, this is taking on areas where we can find common ground and build a legal immigration system that's good for America.
Yes, well, we're way overdue. Maybe about 54 years since we've done the proper immigration reform effort that would bring our country into the 21st century.
Jerron, I think it was in the Washington Examiner piece, a senior administration official said, quote, "If you look at our immigration system, it's basically a coat of paint on top of a coat of paint on top of a coat of paint. And what we want to do is sand it down." I mean, I think it's a fascinating analogy. And as you say, it's 54 years old. It's time to start sanding and get down to some bare metal and come back with some colors that will hold.
That's exactly right. And I think that what we're doing here is prioritizing border security, what I call the platinum standard for border security. And what we're going to do is figure out ways to new ways to modernize our infrastructure in between the ports of entry and stop the influx of illegal drugs and contraband to our people. And then the second thing is protect American wages with a legal immigration system that's going to prioritize the nuclear family and then attract and retain the best and the brightest.
Before I get into the elements of that, when you talk about the type of workers we're wanting to come in, or the type of people coming in, so that they can become a part of the American system, and that's what we're looking for. But there's been a lot of questions, and I don't think the media is covering this very well, but there are sections of the border that there are barriers now being built. This is happening. The president is getting it done. So this is, when you talk about securing the border first, full security, that's in process right now.
That is very much so in process. What we're trying to do is continue to keep our border modernized for the future. You know, what a secure border today may not be a secure border tomorrow, but we got to keep up with technology. That's why we're implementing a new system that would modernize those ports, give resources for 100% of scanning of people and goods at the point of entry. It also would allow for quicker trade transactions and, what's most important, a self-sustaining revenue source.
Yeah, that was one of the interesting aspects that was explained last week to me, is that a lot of the fees, fines, and stuff would go into funding this so that not contingent upon appropriations and political games, so this thing can move forward.
That's exactly right. I think it's a modern way of leveraging technology and continuing to keep our country safe.
Now, let's talk about one of the aspects I thought was very intriguing, was when you compare the United States and who we allow to come in, you compare it to Canada, the UK, other places. Only about 12% of our immigrants were based on job skills. That will rise to 57%. So that means that those coming into the country have a much better chance of then getting a job, going to work, being productive.
Productive, yes. And that's the thing. The system that we currently have in place, you either have to, A, be able to hire a lawyer to go through the lottery process that will secure you, or B, have some extended family member that lives here. And that's not fair. And in fact, we don't even get an opportunity to attract some of the brightest from some of the most diverse countries because they don't have a family member here and maybe you can't afford one of the lawyers.
And one of the other aspects of that they were discussing was you have someone who came here, went to school, educated, but then they weren't able to stay. So we're looking at those that fit in. And so it's more of a, you know, merit-based, if you will, that they have something to do, they have something to offer, and they get, you know, they get a chance to come here and be a part of America.
Yeah, that's the part. The Build America Visa would target extraordinary talent. That's investors, people who want to invest and create jobs in America, professional individuals, lawyers, doctors, as well as specialized vocation, welders, people who work in the trades, and then exceptional students. We think that and in many walks of life, these individuals haven't been able to fairly compete or have an opportunity to earn their way into America, and this new Build America Visa will make it available for all people in the world.
Jaron, one final point, and we're about out of time, but it's the family aspect, the nuclear family here. Instead of having, you know, your second cousins, third cousins, and those coming in on your coattails, we're talking about nuclear family. We're talking about spouses. We're talking about children. It radically changes who gets in.
Right, and that's the prioritization. And so that cuts the family-based immigration piece down to 33% from 66%, because the focus there is then on immediate family, wife, and children. And so in many cases, some of those individuals are caught up in backlogs, and that hasn't created a fair system for many families who want to come into America.
And so it's a pro-family immigration policy.
That's exactly right.
Jaron, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate the update on today's announcement.
Thank you for your leadership, and we look forward to continuing to work with you.
You can learn more about the president's new immigration plan when you visit tonyperkins.com. While you're there, I'd encourage you to download the Stand Firm app for your smartphone. It's an easy way to keep up with the topics you care about most. Again, that's at TonyPerkins.com.
When you look at what is going on in our country and culture today, do you often ask, what can I do? Well, mark your calendar for the Values Voters Summit on October 11th through 13th in Washington, D.C., and join thousands of Americans just like you who want to change the culture in a way that human life is valued, families flourish, and religious liberty thrives. Past speakers include President Donald Trump, Vice President Mike Pence, Secretary Mike Pompeo, Kirk Cameron, Dana Loesch, and Ben Carson. In addition, there will be opportunities to meet with organizations and attendees that share a Christian worldview, and informational sessions focused on the topics of life, religious liberty, the LGBT movement, national security, the realities of socialism, and more. On October 11th through 13th, stand with thousands of Values voters to restore our great nation. Registration is now open. Don't miss the early bird price of $99. Visit valuesvotersummit.org for more information. That's valuesvotersummit.org.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. When EQLT, a mutual fund focused on LGBT advocacy, was launched in February of 2014, it enjoyed positive global exposure from the media because it invested exclusively in companies that support the LGBT agenda. Now, just 5 years later, it has ceased trading. At the same time, biblically-based investing is soaring. Joining Tony to explain the contrast of these two strategies is Robert Netzley, the CEO of Inspire Investing and author of the book, Biblically Responsible Investing.
Robert, welcome to Washington Watch.
Thanks for having me, Tony.
Robert, give us the stats on the EQLT, this pro-homosexual transgender-focused fund. How much money did they attract?
Well, when they closed, they had about $16 million or so, you know, give or take, over the past couple of years. But not a whole lot in the grand scheme of things when you compare it to other funds out there.
So, I mean, is this because the market's not doing good? Is this a bad environment for investing? I mean, what's the deal?
Well, it was invested in U.S. large cap companies, and if anyone's following the market the past 5 years, it's been a phenomenally good time to be in U.S. large cap stocks. So really, that's not it. Board of trustees for the fund stated that it closed due to a lack of market interest, which is interesting admission from the people who are actually running the fund.
Now, you contrasted this in your piece in the Christian Post, which I think people can read at my website, TonyPerkins.com. You contrasted that with biblically based investment, where you've got, like yours, institutions, entities that are investing money based upon biblical principles, only putting it in certain places. Those funds are doing quite well.
Doing quite well. I mean, by the grace of God, I mean, our firm in particular, you know, we started this year with $250 million under management. We're at $465 million today. We launched our funds just barely 2 years ago on the New York Stock Exchange. Other companies are enjoying the same success. Kennedy Plan is continuing to grow. You know, there's many stories. Really, there's a movement going on. God's people are opening their eyes to the fact that they have God's money invested in companies that are diametrically opposed to his values, and it doesn't have to be that way.
So, Robert, explain how that works. So just explain to our listeners what your company would do and type of investments that you take, 401ks, you know, what is it that you take and how do you invest it?
Yeah, so any investment that you would do with, you know, any other firm like a Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley or Vanguard or anything like that, we also do, as well as others in the industry. And the difference is that, you know, we look inside of these mutual funds or ETFs or other vehicles and say, okay, where are the most inspiring biblically aligned companies in that space? And let's invest in those. Let's avoid the bad actors, those who are, you know, violating biblical principles. Maybe they're manufacturing abortion drugs, selling pornography, you know, sponsoring gay pride parades, you know, other things of that nature. Avoid those, but then go further and look for those companies that are curing cancer, creating clean water solutions, you know, operating with integrity and really aligned with biblical wisdom, biblical morality, and invest in those companies. And that's what we do. That's biblically responsible investing.
So Scripture would suggest that when we follow God's plan, we do things God's way, we get the results that God would bring about. And so this is not just charitable giving, but this is actually investing in principled-based companies, and the result is you're getting a good return.
Absolutely. And, you know, certainly this is not a prosperity gospel type thing where, you know, you invest, you know, according to the Bible, and it's going to make you, you know, rich beyond your wildest dreams. But it is a interesting fact that even secular research from the likes of Wharton University, Oxford University, and others, including faith-based educational institutions like Biola University and others, have put out a lot of research on this specific topic over the past several years, and found that when you invest in positive companies that are operating ethically in line with biblical values, they actually do perform better over the long term. And so that really is changing the trend across the investment landscape. And here in America, the Christian investment landscape is huge. Evangelical Christians, Protestants, and Catholics who hold conservative values control $21 trillion of stocks, bonds, and mutual funds inside retirement plans. That's two-thirds of the entire retirement asset in the United States. So it's a huge opportunity to influence culture for America as we, you know, invest with God's values.
Well, that's pretty interesting there, just that number itself and the percentage. That would suggest that, you know, evangelicals, Bible-based citizens, are thinking about the future and using their resources responsibly, because that's a disproportion for their size of the population. They have a disproportionate amount of the retirement funds.
Right, absolutely. And you can imagine that also means that the overwhelming majority of folks who share our values are right now invested in the companies that would drop their jaw to the floor. You know, they're invested in the Targets of the world, Starbucks of the world, the, you know, pornography distributors of the world, and it doesn't have to be that way.
So how can folks find out more how to invest in a biblically sound way?
Well, if you go to inspireinvesting.com, we have a lot of tools there where you can dig into your portfolio and look and see and discover what you own and find alternatives that honor God and help you reach your financial goals.
All right, Robert. Thanks so much for stopping by today. Very interesting conversation. And, you know, the proof is out there. Robert, thanks so much.
Thank you, Tony.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.